Welcome to Starfleet Universe On-Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. And also, if you want to listen to the stream, and actually you can chat there too. I prefer TalkShoe just because of that's where most people are. If you want to be over there, that's fine. I'll be happy to chat with you over on YouTube. And the YouTube live channel, you can find it either going to Facebook. I post the link there. I post the link on Twitter. I also post the link on the discussion board at starfleetgames.com. Moving onward, we have, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, you want to reach me via Skype, just use Skype ID Friends Games, FRANZGMES. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account for the podcast is SFU On Call. That's SFUONCALL. And if you want to follow my personal account, I will be talking about, my faith. I'll be talking about baseball and other things. So if you don't want to listen to that, don't follow my personal account, which is Paul Franz. So to find me there, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, I have a tertiary account called Franz Games. I announce, I retweet this podcast and also the different news, including client updates. I apologize for not getting that good. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned up podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. The Zinni Large Fast Attack Shuttle Killer. It will be coming soon to Shapeways. Also, Steve Cole was busy working on several projects, including Capsule number 53. Also, some stuff for the Gorn Master Starship book. And, of course, keep him in your prayers because of this upcoming surgery that he's going to have. Moving forward to Steve Patrick, he's been working on SFB updates, also working on the Gordon Master Starship book. Gene has been busy on the GURPS Prime Directive Revision. Yes, can't wait for that to be released. That'd be awesome. And of course, uploading ships to Shapeways, keep Shapeways running nice and smoothly. And of course, he took care of customers and did some other marketing stuff, including taking care of Facebook. If you have any questions, she's happy to answer you on the Facebook page. And moving on to the SFB Online tournaments, of course, we have the Masters Tournament for 2018 by Andrew Koch. We sent out many emails. We've got a lot of responses. We're down only two games yet to be played on round one. Only one game has been played in round two. Hopefully we can get more games done in round two. One of two games that yet to be played in round two is my game. It's not my game. It's the game I'm waiting to be played so I can play my round two games. Like, guys, please get it done. Rat 48, run by Ron Braun, Bryn Mawr. Geez, sorry. I'm not doing good today. Only one game to be played on round two, and even round three has a round three game completed, which is always good to see progress when it comes to that. Also, just remember, there's the Council of Five Nations is coming up really quickly, October 5th through 7th. Unfortunately, I will not be able to be there just because it would make my October just way too crazy. That's going to be up at Proctor's Theater and Conference Center in Schenectady, New York. If you need to find out more information, go to www.swa-gaming.org. That's going to be /star-trek/ /star-fleet-games-at- and that's actually the word at dash council. Capitalize all those words except for the at. So, trust me, I'll see if I can get that in the show notes for today. So if you need just to find a quick one, that you will be able to do that as such thing. Moving onward to the library report. Sorry, no progress. And this is annoying. I know it's coming up in October. October is like next week. Got to see if we can get any more done and see if we can get as close to, at the very least, 90%. You know, one thing I have to look into is that's 72.8% of all graphics. That's including Omegas and also PFs. I don't remember if I include the fighters or not, because the fighters are a different story. Fighters, I think that'd be absolutely awesome to have fighters. Have, you know, background images of fighters. I think that'd be awesome. But, you know, that's a story for another day. Again, the complete conversion is 2,426 and yet to be converted to 906. We have been trying, we've been trying to clean up any issues. There is that one open bug, which, not open. I fixed it. I just haven't released the fix. And I plan on releasing the fix this upcoming week, no matter what. I wanted to include the fix for the recording stuff. I just been gotten a little too busy this past week. And yesterday, I was not feeling all that well. So I got my day off. I got nothing done except for I just sat, watched TV, watched my Orioles winning when I went to bed. I actually didn't finish watching the game. So that tells you how tired I was, for those who know me. And so with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight it is me, and Dave's there too. Just for those who are listening at home, yes, the Rams are currently winning the game for the Thursday night football NFL game. Rams 21, Vikings 17, and it's almost halftime. And hopefully you won't hear another update. Of course, it's a podcast. If you listen to the podcast, you go, well, who cares? Because I already know what the score was. I already know what happened. You know, but hey, if you're live, you know that more is going on than the meets the eye. Okay. Tonight, we are going to be discussing a concept which I have on my mind. It's combination of kind of like Fortnite, and I'm not saying that this will be like Fortnite with all the whatever. But the whole idea of Fortnite is, well, actually, Fortnite actually is not a never-ending game. I forget. There are some games that are basically, they're never ending. They always continue on and on and on and on. They never stop. Fortnite, you have a single battle against a lot of opponents, and then after a certain period of time, the battle ends. Now, obviously, what I want to do can do exactly the same thing. You could have it so you start a game, it has a certain amount of time, and then you finish the game. Because some of the aspects to the game, in my mind, require a timer. But so it is going to be time limited to at least to a certain degree when it comes to the game, the turns as they go on. It's going to continue to move forward whether you're ready or not. Just a quick update on other things real quick, and then we'll actually get to our main topic. I'm not going to say slacking, because I've not really been slacking. I've just been very, very, very busy for the past week. The only time I had time to actually do anything, really, possibly Tuesday, mainly Wednesday, but Wednesday, I was yesterday, I was just not having it. I was, you know, had some kind of nose thing, and I had a big headache. Even with some sleep, I still felt tired. So it's like, okay, that's it. You know, I just sat, watched my O's, you know, play against Boston, watched them win. Yay! I know for those of you out there, it's like O's versus Boston Red Sox. Oh, Boston Red Sox is going to win. Yeah, you would think that. But their Sale was pitching, and he didn't do a great job. He didn't do an awful job. I've seen worse for him from a starting pitcher. Watch the Orioles. But obviously the relievers need something to be desired, and as Buster Olney has said, they're definitely, it's a concern there. But I digress. So I haven't got much done. I still want to work on the recording part. I wanted to get the recording part kind of fixed to the degree where other people can use it and it will work properly. And if I had it working properly, then people could use it then people could play back their games. And there are certain things, as I mentioned before, about that I want to fix, but I'm not concerned right off the bat. Something I might want to change. I definitely want to change later the whole idea of the timing of it. When it plays back, it doesn't play back in quite a time-based order, where some things go faster than other things. Now, just each of the playback records, you know, whether it's just changing the speed, or it is actually moving your ship. That playing back that same record takes the same amount of time. That's the simplest way of doing it to start with. So, but anyway, that's, to me, that's minor compared to actually getting it to work and getting it to, it records properly. It's not that it records properly, it plays back properly. I'm not sure what exactly the issue is, but I want to look into it. Videos, of course. I'm doing my best to try to record some things. We'll just have to wait and see how that all turns out in the end. When it comes to, having an automated way of, I still have to look at OBS. There's an automated way to start and recording from the command line. Because obviously that's kind of critical if I want to do an automatic recording or some way of communicating that so it automatically records. Now, obviously, if I have the recording within the client, then it becomes a non-issue. You don't get to stream it, but at the very least, you get to record it later, and I can play it back on my own whenever I need to, and then record that and have it so that I can tweak, so you won't see things live, but you'll at least see recordings, and there'll be more videos. And obviously, if I wanted to, at that point, depends upon the game, I could actually do some commentary on that game. I think that'd be kind of cool. Now, going back, you know, I still got my streaming rig right behind me, which is quite cool. One thing I found out about my quote-unquote hard-coded link, my hard-wired link, it's not that hard. I got what's called a power line. And when it rains, it seems like the power line gets a little flaky, so I'm not exactly sure if I'm getting a short somewhere. I'm hoping that's not it. But it's definitely introducing noise into the line, so to the point where the power line gets flaky. So I lose packets and all those kind of things. You know, lose connections, which is not good. But anyhow. So that, you know, that being it, I still want to do, at the very least, try to get, so we have at least a chat available live. A live chat would be perfect. It would be a live chat and just watch the game. You know, even if it's just the counters. And not actually be able to see the ships, you know, it would be a beginning, which would be great. I'm not sure at the moment whether I want to focus on. Obviously, I want to focus on recording. Also, I need to work on the Starfleet Warlord Aid. There's actually some people who found some bugs, and I need to work on fixing those bugs so they can use the client with certainty that if the one of the things that currently is wrong with the aid is that there are certain orders that it doesn't quite know the proper syntax of the order. So what happens is it turns red. So it turns red to indicate that it's an invalid order. Relatively, a simple aesthetic that will help people to identify, okay, yeah, I've entered in something wrong. Okay, great. I think that is the best one. Now, obviously, the biggest issue with this of having to turn red is, if you're colorblind, like my father was colorblind. And actually, colorblind when it comes to red. So a red light, that's not a red light, it's a gray light. When you're not, see, that's the funny part in my mind, is that if you're not colorblind, it's hard to tell, actually hard to see things as if you're colorblind. Obviously, I've not looked for this, so I'm sure there's someone screaming out there, oh, there's a really cool program to do this. And it's possible, I was thinking about it, on the computers, in theory, you should be able to do something like that. You should be able to create a filter that plays on your display so that you're able to show those things as if you're colorblind. Colorblind to red. I know there's a red color blindness. I'm not sure if there's any other color blindness that can occur. If you can do blue or green, whatever. As I said, that's one thing I'd have to look up. That's why I don't want to talk too much about different kinds of color blindness. Now, with that behind me, I want to work on that aid a little bit. And hopefully I can get those minor fixes out the door so they can do that. And they can do a reinstall and they'll be all good, because some people... That's one of those, yeah. So people can uninstall their client and reinstall it, and they'll be good to go when it comes to the fixes. Because that's one thing that I've changed a little bit, just because of security. And that is, I no longer update the client directly for, like, period. I don't update the client directly anymore. The main reason being because of Windows and the Mac, they don't allow you to do it. I could probably do it on like a Linux box, because on a Linux box, it doesn't have to install it in like an environment where it requires root to actually install. That's always the tough part about doing a Java-based program. That is to get those escalated privileges that are required to install things. Or at least to update things. So now, obviously, with a Mac or Microsoft, what would be really cool is I could put it in the stores. But I already tried to do that with the Mac App Store. They went, "Hey, do you have a license with a Paramount?" And I went, "Nope. I'm sub licensing it from somebody else who has a license." And they said, "Well, we need the contract to prove that you actually have a license." And I went, "Well, I don't have a contract." And Steve Cole said, "Oh, give me contact information. Give me their email address. I'll email them." It's like, well, the problem is they don't have an email address. When it comes to contacting Apple, you have to actually go through the contact website, which is for app developers, and do it that way. So... unfortunately, so I've kind of given up on that idea. I still have to do that, don't I? I actually probably should do it sooner or later, because Steve Cole's going on surgery. That is the whole idea of what happens if he kicks the bucket. Not to be morose. I call it being a friends thing, which is we're able to discuss... seem morose without really, we seem being blasé about it, but we're just being matter of fact about it. Okay, what happens if this happens? And just discuss it. I said we're not being morose. It's called planning. But anyhow, Moving on, let's get on to the main topic for tonight. The main topic for tonight being the idea about a never-ending game. Now, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, this could be a never-ending game, or it could just be a timed game. There's one thing I've definitely been working on some of the details of this, and some of it I really like. It's my SFU ships concept, but on a more interactive level. Now, of course, the question is how many people will be interested in this. The only way to find that out is, in my mind, is to create the game for myself and see if anybody would want to play. Now, obviously, I want to start with the core. What is the core of Starfleet Battles? Okay. The core is, of course, weapons. A ship that flies with the weapons. The weapons have certain arcs. That's one of those core concepts. And, of course, a ship has shields. And that is critical to the whole core of SFB. Why is it critical? Why is it one of those core concepts? What I consider a core concept. I consider that a core concept because of one thing. That is, because of shields, you are forced to turn. It creates a certain tactical element to the game, that if you hadn't just generic shield that went around your ship, and so you knock down the shield, the only reason to turn or turn to a certain way is to have your weapons a certain way. If you go back to Starmada. That's it. Dang it. That's it. Starmada. And that is the original Starmada. No, I think that's the version 2, that which is the Nova. Yeah, the Nova edition. The Nova edition, they removed the concept of shield arc. Now, I have to admit that the original Starmada that had the SFB background material in it wasn't that great either, because of the way the shields work. And overall, you know, because the shields, the whole idea of a shield isn't that it had it so that you damaged it and then you got to the internals of the ship. In Starmada, it was just a modifier to see if you actually got damaged internal or not, which is a totally different concept when it comes to SFB. I mean, totally different concept of tactically. So, given that, it's important to have arc-based shields. In other words, you have your six shields. You have your shield number 1 through 4, covering the different arcs. And given shields that have arcs and weapons that have arcs, that defines your tactical possibilities. It defines how you move things. Now, that's why, you know, another, now, there's, okay, Those are a couple of core elements. And obviously, the other one is movement and how quickly you actually move about the board. There's another core concept in my mind when it comes to SFB, which is the whole thing of an impulse chart. In that, the way you move. It's a proportional, what I call it is a proportional movement system. That is that you move on certain impulses based on your speed. Now, unlike just movement point based games like Silent Death is the one that always comes to mind, because I know some of you go, Silent Death? What is Silent Death? Silent Death is actually a pretty old game at this point. I've not actually checked to see Silent Death still is in existence, but I know like BattleTech is, and I feel pretty confident that they would not change the movement system when it comes to BattleTech. And that is, you have a certain number of movement points where you can move per turn, and then you go, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, boom. And at the end of the turn, you're at that location. SMB doesn't work like that. If you're moving speed, let's say you're moving speed 4, and another person is moving speed 8, and you're both starting at a starting line. This is the way I always explain it. And then slowly what happens is the person moving speed 8 slowly runs past, gains ground, or not gains ground, but, adds separation to the person moving 4. It's not like all of a sudden there's 0 and then they're 4. No. There's 0 and then slowly becomes 1, then comes 2, and then becomes 3, and then becomes 4. Slowly that occurs. So that's another core concept for me, which is the whole impulse movement system. And then of course, there's the ability to do action based on whatever impulse that you want. You don't do actions only at the end or only at the beginning. You can do them anywhere in those impulses. So those, in my mind, those are the core concepts of SFB. Now, given that core concept of SFB, how do you implement that given these core concepts? How do you make them all intertwine and make it simple enough that it can be done quickly? Now, here comes the gotcha. There's a couple ways of doing this when it comes to weapons and speed and movement. There was another concept I forgot that I got written down here, but I forgot to hit on it, which is the whole idea of turn mode. That is, the faster you go, the more hexes you have to go forward before you can turn. Now, obviously, some people would like to have high energy turns, mid-turn speed change, and all this kind of things. Okay, those aren't core. Those are nice to haves. But any game, because I don't know this for a fact. I'm willing to bet that when SMB was originally created, hets were not part of the game. I'm not sure if it was published like that or not. Well, at least when it was first construed, there was no HETs, high energy turns. Because it's a different concept. So this game would not have high energy turns, which some people go, well, can't have that. I'm out of here. Well, then you're not going to enjoy it. This game is not for the, I was going to say for the faint of heart, but I think that's stretching a little bit. If any of you have been listening to me long enough, and because I've talked about SFU ships before, that there are certain things that I really, really like. And that is the whole idea of pre-plotted movement. So the whole idea would be that you pre-plot your movement for the entire turn. Now, don't before you guys go, yeah, but how can you do that for an entire turn? Well, you can do it for an entire turn. But there's one thing I never mentioned. How many impulses are there in a turn? Because those of you who know SFB, who've been there from the beginning, or at the very least have read the rules from way back in the 80s. Yes, back in the 80s. Back in the 80s, with Volume 1, 2, and 3, with, you know, the original Commander's Edition, one thing that you could do, actually I have not checked the rule book lately, so it's possible it might still be in there, which is you had the ability to not only have a 32 impulse chart, but you had a 16 and you had an 8. So basically the whole idea was that you doesn't have to be 32 impulses. You can have so it's the whole idea actually I think was for the if everybody was moving at a slower speed, like everyone was going below speed 16, then use a 16 impulse chart. If everyone's going below speed 8, use an 8 impulse chart. You know, the idea is to simplify the process. In that case, if we actually ever did that, you know, in my mind, you want to talk, you know, Steve Cole talks about, you know, the ability to speed up the game, and that's one of the reasons why they did Federation Commander, was to have kind of a faster game. Not necessarily Starfleet Battles Light, but a faster game. Well, the problem is, did we get a faster game from Federation Commander? That's debatable. Did it go as fast and simple as they want? No. I'm going to bet that the ultimate goal was not achieved. To me, that's fine. But this number keeps coming into my head now, and that is 6 impulses. You have 6 impulses. That means you can do a speed plot, you know, for 6 moves, maximum 6 moves. That means you're moving speed 6. You do for every single impulse. And if someone says, oh, I can't do that, it's like, yes, you can. You're smart. If you play the SFB, you're smart. What happens is that it's a little bit of a guessing game. Which, me, I think that's half the fun, is having a guessing game. What is the whole idea of SFB, if you boil it down to its core, when it comes to tactics, is trying to outguess your opponent. I actually think that's most games, where the whole concept is that you're trying to outguess your opponent. You want to know, you're trying to figure out what is that opponent actually doing, or guessing what the opponent will actually do. Because that's how you win, is that you do that and you counteract what you think he's going to do. You plan for his, it's like, even, you know, it's like chess, you know. Chess is the same way, where you're trying to anticipate your opponent's move. That's why, to me, the ultimate in this one comes to SFB is the whole idea of pseudo versus real plasma torpedoes. It's a guessing game. I have to determine, is that plasma real or fake? Obviously, though, cautious man, the cautious man will not do anything. They will assume that it is real always, until he knows, you know, when it comes to the first plasma torpedo. You don't, the first plasma torpedo, or if you have a plasma torpedo and a fake one is available, you're guessing. The cautious man will just assume that it's real, and then say, okay, how much damage can I take from it and go from that? And if it's fake, then you deal with the consequences. But obviously, you might even think, okay, if it's fake, you do this. If it's real, you do this, and you don't have to worry about the real one coming later. So, that, you know, that's, it's always a guessing game. So all having a pre-plotted movement for six impulses, all that means is that you have to figure out where you want to do it and where you think your opponent will go. Now, there's one thing that I thought about, and I figured if we really want to get this thing moving, have it so that the game actually moves at quite a good pace. I mean, this movement, this could go flying. Another one is what I call pre-plotted action. Now, this is one of those things that makes some people just go, this scares them. But here's the thing. We don't, for this game, we're not, the whole idea is to keep it moving. And then if someone wants to drop, they can drop. Because that's always the biggest issues with SFB games is that you start playing a game, and at some point, what do? You stop. You save the game. You might play for an hour. You might play for 2 hours. You might play for 30 minutes. But you can then save and continue on later. But for that, you're doing all this waiting. And why are you doing this waiting? Because you're trying to decide what you're going to do. Now, and if someone just drops, and let's say that you try to have a large game with like four or five opponents. If one person drops, you're in deep trouble. Or if they walk away from the keyboard in the middle of a turn, you're in trouble. The whole idea of this is that you pre-plot your movement, you pre-plot your action. Now, the action, one thing I was thinking about when it comes to pre-plotting the action, has to be, to a certain degree, play by email light. That is this. If you have seeking weapon coming in at you, you fire your weapons, or you fire so much at that seeking weapon. You know, you can say, well, you fire all the phasers at that seeking weapon. Or you fire this at their seeking weapon. But there's some minor conditionals that can be set, or have to be able to be set, for this to work. At least if we have seeking weapons. If we don't have seeking weapons, I don't think conditionals are not an issue at that point. So obviously, what that means is a first go around, there are no seeking weapons, because we want to start with a simplistic game. Because if everyone has just direct fire weapons, we're good. You know, you can have it, actually people, you can see if enough interest that people want more. If people want more, we can add seeking weapons. But, you know, one thing at a time, which is, of course, if you introduce a game, you have to also do some playtesting. Playtesting, then you have to worry about game balance. Or at least you have to, through playtesting, then you can find out how balanced your game is. So that leaves, you know, what I was thinking about was starting with the basics. That is photons, disruptors, phasers. Those are the basics when it comes to direct fire weapons. And then later on, introduce drones and plasmas. Now, there's two things that obviously need to be added onto the discussion. One of those things, obviously, is going to be EA. I was thinking about this, and there's two ways of doing EA. Number one, you actually have a kind of EA where you're balancing weapons and speed. Well, you know, are you having some kind of energy unit or action points or whatever, however you want to call it. Each unit would have a certain number of these action points. Let's call them action points. And you can either use it for one move, or you can use it for charging, using your weapon, or kind of charging your weapon. This is SFB, which means everything is pre-allocated. Which, in my mind, simplifies things again, because if you pre-plot, I'm gonna put so much in for phasers. Now, here's the one thing that is not gonna be SFB like, at least in my mind, is that the phasers would not have capacitors. Phasers, you actually have to fire. You actually have to have. It's going to be more like FedCom in that regard, in that if you want to fire your phaser, you have to, charge it. At least that's one of the ideas. Now, the other idea that I have is there's no EA at all. You just set your speed to whatever you want it to be. Oh, well, I'm always going to set it to 6. Are you always going to set it to 6? Do you always going to want to be moving fast? Or do you want to move slow? Because the whole idea I thought with turn mode is that, speeds, if you move 1 to 3 hexes in a turn, that's turn mode of 1. If you're moving 4 to 6 hexes on a turn, then your turn mode is 2. Obviously, this is going to keep track of turn modes cross turns. And if you're not moving at all, you said, I'm going to go speed 0. At the very end of the turn, you can then tack. I'm thinking about either end or the very beginning of the turn. I'm not sure which at the moment. Probably beginning would be better in that regard. So that's two ways. The whole idea with it, if you have no EA. If you have no EA, then it's purely the weapons are purely available on a per turn basis. Meaning, for like example, photons are available once every other turn. Now, obviously, if you don't use it that second turn, you can push it onto the turn after that. So if you fire it on turn 1, it's available again on turn 3. And then if you don't use it on turn 3, then you can fire it on turn 4 still, and that is fine. But you still have to, I was going to say, but you still have to charge them, but this is the non-EA one. So that's one way of doing it. You can define what speed you want, because if you really think about it, you don't always want to go speed 6. When it comes to approaching, yes, you want to go speed 6. If you want to do, fire and just fly past your opponent, yeah, you want to go speed 6. But as you approach, remember, you're both plotting speeds. You're doing a whole movement plot, which is you're trying to outguess your opponent. If you're trying to outguess your opponent, when you get to, let's say you get to range 6, and you guess, your opponent is going to move 2. You get to move speed 6, and you figure, your opponent, he's going to just go 6. He's going to go 6. So you go 6. What that means is after 1 or 2 hexes, and you're at an oblique, or close to an oblique, you're going to want to fire then, and then keep going. Because you have to remember, you have to also pre-plot your activity. What happens if he decides to go speed 1 or speed 2? Speed 2 meaning that he moves the first impulse. No, it means he doesn't move until the third impulse, then he moves the sixth impulse. So you're going to be a lot farther distance at that case. So you might actually hit a different shield in that case. Now, some people, I think, aren't going to like this whole idea. It's not going to be their cup of tea, because of there are some people, and I know I know of at least one person who. The reason why I say this is because I know this one person who was played by email, but he wanted every single impulse he had a break, and that's okay when you're up close. But no, play by email. The whole idea is to let go. Let go of having to know every little itty bitty detail. Why do you let go of knowing every little bitty detail? Because you realize that details don't matter at some point. When it comes to distances, if you're like range 30, does it matter if you side slip once or side slip twice or you turn in or you don't, or you side slip in? No, it doesn't matter that much. In the long run of things, it does not matter. When you get closer, yes, things matter more. Now, as I said, this might not be a cup of tea for everybody. But again, if you played Star Armada, like the what was the edition? The edition before the Nova edition. And I forget what that was. This is awful. My edition before the Nova edition, you basically had to do the same thing. You had to pre-plot your movement, and which is what got me interested in Star Armada to begin with. Because I got tired of this whole, pre-plot your amount of speed. You got this idea in your head what you want to do, and then slowly try to work through that as the turn went on. And then at the very end, for Star Armada, you do your pre-plotted movement, and then then you do action at the very end. And that's fine. But I want it to be faster. Because, as I said, the whole idea is that if you lose someone, you lose someone. Who cares? If they want in between turns, if they want to drop, fine. Have fun, Have some, like, it's more like BZ Flag where you can drop in or get killed and you're out. Okay. You had your fun for 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, and you're done. And then you can leave and you come back if you want to or whatever. It all depends on how many are there, obviously. But and you could start with two, or if you want to, you can get together a group of five and fly around and play. However you want to do it. Now, there are some things I still haven't gotten down the details on. Even some, I still have some open questions, as I mentioned before. Some of the other questions, obviously, are shields. Here, this is always the balance. This is always the balance that SFB tries to achieve, and it does a pretty good job. And after, what's it now, 30 years now? I think it's like been 30 years, possibly a little longer than that. I have to figure out when it actually came out. But that is balancing the weapons' effectiveness, the amount of damage the weapon's going to do versus the amount of shield strength you're going to give to that ship. And in this case, the shield strength for each facing. Obviously, you can start off with something basic and simple, which is 360 degrees. Each shield arc is the same shield strength. That's something to do simple. Obviously, people that run SFB would probably squawk at that, and for good reason, because of an SFB or even FedCom, what you normally have is you have the front half is stronger than the back half, at the very least. Obviously, like for the Klingons, usually it was like, okay, the number shield number one was the strongest, and then you have 2 and 6 were a little weaker than shield number one, and then shield number 5 and 3 were a little less, and the rear shield was the least. If I recall correctly, I'm pretty sure that's the way the Klingons were set up. And then of course the Hydrants came along and they went, this doesn't work. So, they reinforced the shield number 4 so they could have equal around the rear or half of the ship. But at the very least, have it so that the front half of the ship the shields are stronger than the rear shields. So now the question is amount of points, you know. How much damage should a shield be able to take versus weapon strength? As in, how many weapons and what kind of weapons are going to be allowed on the ships? And, of course, lastly, internal strength of the ship, i.e., how much damage does it require to blow the ship up? And actually, it comes. There's also one core thing to me. Okay, here's the thing. I don't consider this a core component of SFB, though some people might consider it. And it kind of is to a certain degree. And that's the whole idea of damage allocation. I.e., you roll your damage, and depending upon how you roll, you either hit a weapon, a movement, you know, like warp, or you just hit an internal, you know, like a hull box. You know, me, for this game, what I was thinking of is have it like a fighter. You know, where the whole idea of a fighter is really, really simple. And that is, you have so many number of points that takes to actually completely and utterly kill that fighter that's dead, just disintegrates. But there's a point, which I think, if I recall correctly, it's 2/3. That's when it becomes crippled. Now, becomes an excellent question, which is, do we want to have that? So there's the whole concept of crippling a ship. Because one thing I did not bring up, at least initially, the whole idea of this is single ships. Each player has their own ship. They do not have a fleet. They do not have a squadron. They have a single ship. Because in my mind, what normally happens with SFB? Let's be honest here. If you have a squadron, what do? You take all that squadron and then you fire it on a single ship. The idea is to blow up that ship. And then so the first person who actually is able to destroy a ship, well, they win, is what it ends up being, because of they have the strength now on their side. So that's why it's like, okay, it's a single ship. Now, so damage allocation, you know, I think the whole idea of having it as a fighter. Now, the question is, do we want to have it so it's always full strength when it comes to weapons all the way until it dies? Or do we want to have it so that, okay, when you get to 2/3, then you lose like half your weapons. Because, well, fighters, you lose all but a phaser 3. That's fighters. But I don't think that's the way we'd want to go with a ship. You know, have it said, oh, no, you lose everything, but you can fire a single little phaser. Pew, pew. No, I don't think so. I think that's not what people would want. I think people would want to be able to fight to the bitter end, you know. Now, the one thing we could do is force the ship to go slower. You know, when you cripple the ship, okay, now you only can go max speed of 3. I think that's a better thing, because then they can't run away. They can still fight, but they can't run away. So they're still in. Basically, they're still in it. When it comes to the battle, they're still in it. Now, as I mentioned before, we do have the issue of energy of an EA. And do we do an EA, or do we just have it so that the weapons are based off of turns? Or do you have actually action points where there are a certain number of action points which you use for movement versus your weapons? Do we want to actually introduce that concept? I don't know at the moment. That's one of those things that's still up in the air. I'm right now, I'm leaning towards not doing the EA and just have it so that, you know, your weapons just go through it. Now, number one thing is, obviously, after I write this all up, I have to playtest it before anyone sees this sees the light of day, you know. And I just want to get the whole idea of tonight is just to get the idea out there. Have people running through your head. Is this something that you're interested in? You know, if you want to, you know, I am me. No, not I am me. Sorry. I'm thinking about my work. If you want to, feel free to send me an email at sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's one way you can do it. Obviously, on Twitter, you can DM me there, or you can DM me on Twitter. I don't remember if I have SFU on call, if I have that set up to be wide open or not. I.e., I don't have to be following you for you to DM me. I have to double check that. If it's not, I will have that open by tomorrow. So, I think that that's overall a good concept. Now, there's one thing that I have not yet mentioned, and what is one of those key aspects to this game. The only reason this works is because it's designed to be online. Obviously, you can play it offline. It just requires you to have a timer. The whole idea is to keep this game moving. Obviously, if you're playing offline, you can plan it all you want. But online, one of those key factors in my mind is that you have to have a deadline. There has to be a real-time portion to this game. If you're just playing by yourself against a robotic opponent, that doesn't matter. But when you're playing with other people involved, especially when you have multiple people, i.e. not just you and a friend, you and a friend and a friend friend and another guy that just walked in the door. And that is, each EA will require, you'll only be allowed, at the moment I'm thinking 5 minutes. 5 minutes for each turn. And then after 5 minutes is up, I'll have it so you can submit early, but you can't submit late. It's going to be automatic. After 5 minutes, boom. Your turn is up. Whether you're fully planned or not, you're done. You know, and there will be a timer. The whole idea would be that there'll be a timer. You can see how much time you have left. Now, obviously, that might add some stress. Oh, good. Because part of the reason why you have certain things like this in real time is that stress level. You want it to be like, okay, I got this done. You know, you feel the pressure of the time limit. At the same time, you have the time to plan. In my mind, 5 minutes is good enough time to do everything, because you're only planning for 6 impulses. This is not like SFB, where you have the possibility of planning out for a full 32 impulses. Because even if you don't plan out the movement to the nth degree in SFB, you're still thinking 32 impulses in generic terms. Oh, I want to move this, you know, move around here. If he moves around here, I'll do this. Da, 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 da. And you spend all this time thinking about and guessing what your opponent's going to do. with, as is, I might, you know, heck, I might go, okay, well, you got 2 minutes to do everything, you know, one thing at a time. You know, let's first try 5 minutes. If 5 minutes doesn't work, then if we find 5 minutes, we have everyone's just sitting around doing nothing. Obviously, if everyone can say, you know, submit, 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 you know, then it will go immediate. But if everyone says, well, 5 minutes seems like we're all getting done beforehand. So why don't we crank up the notch so it's down to 2 minutes or down to three? You know, because people might say, well, it's too slow. I want it to speed up. That's one thing that obviously we could do. But, you know, first, the basics, the first thing that really has to be worked out is weapon damage, number of internals, shield strength. Those are the three things that have to be worked out, because that's what actually, in my mind, will maintain the balance. Now, I thought about Andrews, and you know, what would you do with an Andromedan? You know, how would you add an Andromedan to this whole mix? Because I am the Andromedan. In which case, Andros would probably be added to the mix at some point. Now, obviously, the tough part about Andros is not. I was originally thinking about the displacement device, but to me, the tough part for Andros would be, how do you do PA panels? Because the way the PA panels work when it comes to Andros is that they're both defensive and they're offensive, meaning that you get a certain amount of energy from the PA panels. So what might, in that case, if we actually had an energy allocation, what I would have them do is probably have it so that a certain amount of damage would be taken out of the quote unquote shields, and of course the shields then would be 180 degree shields. So it's a little different. So each turn you get so much quote unquote energy out of it, and you have that, and that gets turned into action points. If we did actually, you know, EA. And so that would be the benefit of the Andromedan. Now, the bad part of it, obviously, is it's a 180 degree shield. Also, you might get one or two action points per turn to add on to your number of action points that you actually can use. Now, that's better than possibly, you know, the shields. Well, the shields also are free. They don't cost you anything. You know, maybe it might require. Wow. This guy noted by Dave that the Rams just pulled off a 57-yard pass play. Wow. Awesome. But anyhow, you know, maybe for the Andromedans, they're required to have at least one action point just to keep their PA panels up, you know? So it requires them, there's a cost involved there. You know, maybe you get so much damage, okay, you get two action points brought into your system. But it's going to cost you one action point to actually have your PA panels up, and therefore you have that expense each and every turn. You know, things like that. Well, I'm going to see if I can do is write this up as a board game. You know, do some quick testing on a board, probably pen and paper first, to when it comes to weapon strength and shield strength. Because the one thing about this, in my mind, is that the ships wouldn't be that big, because it wouldn't be like a standard cruiser SSD with all the internals. With the number of internals you usually get for one of those suckers is what, between 70 and 100? I don't think anyone really wants to play that. What I was thinking about was more along the lines of maybe 20, you know, 20 internals or something along those lines. I said the whole thing's a balancing act, and the question is, how do you balance it all out? You know, what are the numbers that work? Obviously, here's the one, which to me is always the big thing, which is if we went for the larger numbers, then I would kind of be forced to do damage allocation, so that we had it was split up into individual types of boxes, not just hull, a generic like fighter. You'd actually have to have some things which were for movement, some things which were just hull, some things which were weapons. For the larger ships, if we ever went that large, I'm hoping to avoid that kind of thing. Obviously, if you want to have it so that more of a ever playing game, what might be required would be that you might actually add into the game a neat idea, which is add onto the board recharge stations or recharge boxes that you can pick up on the board. And if you pick that up, that what happens is that you're all fixed up, or at the very least, that your internals are fixed up, and maybe you grab another, a different fix up station, which is just for shields, things like that. I think it could be kind of cool. There's one thing I was thinking about, and unfortunately what happened is that I was playing Duskers. For those of you who don't know what Duskers is, which is probably most of you, Duskers is a kind of an interesting game. It's a puzzle to a certain degree, in that you control these drones, these robots, basically. And then you control these robots as you go on these derelict ships to collect salvage to whether that salvage is actually to scrap or it actually is other drones that you can pull. And the problem with that is that some of those, you have like these nasty aliens that might destroy your drones. But also you're trying to find out what happened to all these derelict ships along the way. Now, the thing is, I haven't gotten far enough into Duskers to get to that point. Last time I played, I knew that they have motion detectors that you can start, and the problem is the motion detectors aren't always, can't find always all the aliens. And that's what happened, is that I went to a room, there was an alien, he killed my drone, and unfortunately I had no way of actually shutting the door because my drone was blocking the door. So it's like, darn. And it killed so many drones. I went, okay, reset. So next time I play, I'm gonna start from the beginning. So, but the really cool thing about Duskers is it's a command line interface. To a certain degree, you can actually control the drones by using the arrow keys. But you never touch the mouse. And then you can actually tell it like, tell this drone, navigate drone number one to room number five, and it'll just there's an automated system which is just, and it'll go to room five, however that is, assuming that it can get there. Well, I was thinking about the same thing for this, which is the whole idea is that you could do it via command line interface, control completely the command line interface, because of obviously the tough part when it comes to the interface is actually would be the pre-ply and the movement of the actions. Now, actions, you almost cannot do that completely using command line, because you want to have certain actions, you want to have some minor conditionals available too, because there's minor conditionals that will allow you to to do, as I said, with the drones and all and so forth. But obviously, the conditionals aren't really needed until you have seeking weapons. Because I think it's better if you have to guess what your opponent's, where your opponent's going to be, and you fire. Now you can fire. You can say, "Oh, I'll fire all weapons facing your opponent," or you can fire. You know. Or you can have it so that it fires a single phaser, or just one photon, or whatever. So you know, it'd be kind of cool that way. I like the idea of having so it's never ending play, meaning have it so that you can just join the room, and join the game at any time, and if someone's there, you can play with against them. If there's no one there, then you can, if you want to, you can roam around. Hey, roam around the board. You can find this piece or find this piece. You know, these things maybe have a way of you actually being able to explore the board per se. Possibly even add, well, actually would be really cool, asteroids. Have it so that you can't go into the asteroids portions of the map. And you can't fire through them either against your opponents. So you can kind of play hide and seek, kind of a maze kind of thing. I think that'd be kind of cool. I would probably want to start off with not having it, to have, just have it open. But as I said, there's certain things that have to be worked out first, which mainly is the damage and defensive factors, that kind of thing. Well, I think we will wrap it up there. We had a nice little discussion about the game, an idea for a never-ending game based on the SFU universe using the core concepts of Starfleet Battles itself. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.